Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So delighted to be joined in this odd self-isolation time by Scotland Sevens player Tom Brown. Tom, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, absolute pleasure. Thanks for coming on. So how's self-isolation treating you so far? What's your current setup?
Yeah, so we've managed to get up north. We're staying up at my fiance's kind of farm at the moment. So to be honest, it's probably the best place for me to be. It's, you know, you've got to try and stay kind of active and keep up your training during this time. But having a bit of freedom up here has been awesome. But yeah, it's difficult because obviously we're in this kind of situation that we're supposed to be in Hong Kong at the moment playing this weekend, actually, and then obviously London and Paris after that, but everything's been postponed. So we're in this odd situation that, you know, you want to stay fit because you want to be kind of ready to go. But for me personally, I'm kind of thinking, you know, Hong Kong's been postponed, Singapore, obviously, London, Paris. So, you know, I'm kind of treating this as a bit of an active off season. You know, obviously trying to stay fit and kind of work on, you know, my endurance and getting out and, you know, running a bit more, and obviously don't have the kind of access to the gym and weights, etc. So, you know, it's a time to try out some new stuff. And, you know, everyone's in this a situation where they've got to adapt. And, you know, I suppose up here is giving me the best opportunity to to kind of work on other aspects of my fitness. Mm.
It's really interesting, that point about kind of keeping motivated. I mean, how is Kieran like keeping everyone as a squad like on track and making sure that they're still, you know, working hard and on all those kind of things?
Yeah, well, obviously Sean Lamont's our S&C coach now, S&C right. Manager. So, like, he's obviously sending through programs for the boys, and he's brilliant at kind of adapting programs. And it's not your kind of, you know, especially during this time where it's not, you're kind of going to your gym and you do your kind of core exercises. Like, he's put together kind of body weight exercises and programs that we can go out in the park or go into the garden or, you know, even in your living room and you can perform those programs. So that's pretty cool. And again, like, for me, because I've kind of done this for so long now, to actually have something a wee bit different is, you know, quite exciting.
Yeah.
So that is kind of a bit of a motivation for me. Kieran has been keeping us busy. We've all got kind of projects to do, kind of looking over the season that we've had so far, analysing, you know, the team performances, analysing ourselves. And actually this week we've got a kind of presentation to kind of give back, kind of a FaceTime presentation to give back to the coaches. So, you know, the guys are keeping really busy. Another thing that we do is when we're on tour, we do this thing called Bring the Joy.
Okay.
And so every morning, kind of 7 o'clock, just before breakfast, we kind of all meet in the corridor or, you know, outside the rooms. And we always do like kind of a 5-minute game or competition. And it's just kind of something that kind of gets the game going, wakes boys up, you know, just a bit of team camaraderie.
Yeah.
So we've actually decided that we're going to keep that up during this time. So every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 9 o'clock, we have a big kind of FaceTime. And guys bring kind of competition, whether it's kind of quizzes or, you know, activities or something. So we're doing that every Tuesday and Thursday, which kind of keeps the squad together. Yeah. Because I think kind of one thing that I've, you know, really noticed going from a 15s environment to a 7s is how important the kind of team environment is. Mm. And I think it's important that during this time of isolation, like, we keep that camaraderie up, and yeah. You know, we're still kind of in touch and we're keeping that kind of those team ethoses together. So, you know, we are kind of keeping busy on top of, like, obviously our fitness and doing everything we can and diet, yeah. You know, everything within our control. So we are, yeah, we're keeping busy at the moment.
That's really interesting. Why do you think there's more of an emphasis on the team ethos with sevens versus 15s? Is it like just the fact that you're sort of traveling quite a lot, or what do you think it is?
Yeah, definitely. I think, obviously, I think with the sevens, there's a lot of work because we do the competitions where we go away and, you know, we might be playing in a different time zone, and then obviously we come back from these places and we train kind of, you know, we're not in the public eye as much as the 15s teams who are kind of regularly playing kind of week in, week out. So, but in saying that, we are, you know, we're always together, we're training together. It's a small squad as well. You know, we've got 14 core members of the squad this year. So, you know, that makes, you know, it's a small group and you get to know these guys really, really quickly. And, you know, I suppose with a larger squad, you've got 40, 50 guys in a 15 squad, you know, you do get the tendency to get, you know, little groups that kind of form and, you know, people stick within those groups because it's such a big squad. Mm. But within the sevens, you've got to be a pretty kind of close-knit group to kind of survive. And I think, you know, and kind of carrying on from that, especially when you go away on these tournaments and you're staying in the hotels, you literally are in each other's pockets.
Yeah,
and you can get a little bit of cabin fever during these kind of two and a half tours, where, and that's where guys' kind of personalities really kind of shine through. So, you know, keeping up that, you know, but I mean, the great thing is that we've got a brilliant group of guys. Mm. You know, all of them are, you know, as well as being very talented at a rugby pitch, are all good guys. So it's very easy to get on with this lot. So yeah, no, I think it's really important. I think what we're doing with, you know, staying in touch during this time is really important as well. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
And I mean, what are the other sort of major differences that you found coming from the 15s to the 7 setup? And, you know, how much have you had to sort of like almost like relearn a new sort of skill rather than what you were doing in the past? Or do you think that sort of your skill set is actually transferred over quite well?
Yeah, I think first and foremost is that I think the game, the thing that I learned very quickly is that the game of sevens is so different to the game of 15s.
Yeah.
And I've been learning this entire year, and I kind of, you know, through my experience of 15s, I thought I'd be able to kind of transition really quickly and, you know, be able to adapt. And what I've learned is that, you know, there's a hell of a lot of work that you've got to put into the sevens to be able to perform on the circuit. I think the circuit is the most competitive it's ever been, like, especially, you know, this year being an Olympic year.
Yeah.
All 16 teams or kind of 15 core teams are competitive. Anyone can beat anyone.
Yeah.
And you've really got to be on top of your game. And, you know, some of the guys that I play with, you know, there's a couple of guys off the top of my head, but, you know, Robbie Ferguson and, you know, Max and Sammy and, you know, all these boys, like, they're class rugby players and what they can do on a sevens pitch. I mean, you kind of look at it and you see, you know, Max kind of run 90 metres and skin kind of six guys in the process. And you kind of watch it and go, you know, well, that's just sevens. But, you know, the ability to do that, even on a sevens circuit, competing against some of the, you know, my view is some of the top athletes in the world at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to do that is pretty spectacular. And, you know, I'm finding my role within the team. You know, my role is probably more of a, you know, distributor, like within the sevens, whereas, you know, obviously going from the wing in 15s, you want to be attacking, you want to be, you know, carrying ball, and you want to be, but, you know, in the sevens, you know, I'm finding a different role. So, you know, to be able to manipulate a defence and, like, get the ball out to, you know, guys like Max and Sam and Coombsy on the wings and just, so, you know, watch them do their thing is, like, it's pretty cool to watch, like, even when you're on their team. But, you know, I think the biggest thing is just been my appreciation of, you know, how tough the game of sevens is. Like, it is a different level to what I've even, you know, experienced even being with Edinburgh for so many years. It's a completely different kind of season, but when you're in competition and you're doing those two tournaments back to back, you know, physically it's the most demanding thing I've kind of ever done. And, you know, as I say, like, the talent we've got within the squad right now is class. And, you know, there's a few things that we want to tweak and, you know, get better, but I think we've got a brilliant squad to be able to do. Like, we're sitting in a position that actually I think, you know, we're disappointed we're in at the moment. But as I say, every team is so competitive.
And what has that been the view then of the season so far, that there's been some good points, but you still think there's a lot more to come from the team?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, obviously for me, like, personally, like, it was a big learning curve for me, like, going into the 15s and, you know, being able to adapt. And, you know, I've got to kind of, you know, I had to work a lot on my, you know, my speed and my fitness. And, you know, these are things that I thought I'd just be able to kind of take from a 15s environment and just kind of walk into a 7s. And I've already got it. But, you know, I've very quickly, you know, realised that that's not the case. I think we had not a slow start to the season, because in Cape Town we reached quarterfinal and, you know, we beat England and we had some really, really good performances. But, you know, there has been a transition of, you know, coaching staff and, you know, we're playing a new style. We've got a new defensive system where, you know, we're trying a couple of things out in attack where, you know, some guys are playing positions they've never played before. Like, I've kind of gone into a hooker role where, you know, I've never hit a scrum or I've never jumped in a lineup, but, you know, that's what I'm doing right now. And, you know, Max has gone from the wing and he's playing a bit of nine. And, you know, these guys are kind of, we're changing things around a bit, but, you know, bringing in a new kind of coaching staff. And I think Kieran is awesome. And, you know, having Sean and even Mikey, our physio, like, plays a huge role within the squad because it is a small squad. You know, I think, give them a little bit of time, give us a little bit of time. Like, we should be competing in, you know, certainly that top 10. Yeah. So I think we've had a tough kind of rub of the green this year. Like, I was just actually having a think about it before this, and we've had Australia 4 out of the 6 tournaments in our group. Yeah. We've had USA 5 of the 6.
Yeah.
6. And they, you know, Australia, I would kind of rank as top 3 in the world at the moment.
Yeah.
USA are, you know, 2nd in the world in terms of last year's performances. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had some tough, the way that the sevens is kind of, the way it's gone and the rankings and where you get placed and the groupings for the next tournament has seen a lot of our groups be quite similar.
Yeah.
So we then get stuck into this kind of cup competition or the bowl competition. And then we really scrap. And that's where we're good, is that when we really scrap on kind of day 2 and we kind of really find our form. And I suppose where we are now is that we're beating the teams we are supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, and we feel like we should be beating. But the teams that we, you know, feel like we can beat and we can kind of, to be able to compete in quarterfinals and semifinals and finals, we're just not performing our best against those teams. Mm. And we're coming off the pitch every time frustrated. And honestly, we put in so much work into these guys and so much analysis. But then the game comes and it's over like that. And that's the thing, is that, like, you know, if you're 10% off against Australia, USA, New Zealand, you're just not going to get the result. And, you know, what I'm learning is that, you know, it is such, you know, you make one mistake, one error, it's going to be a try down the other end of the pitch. And that's where the situations that we're finding ourselves in is that we're pressing. And then, you know, one little thing, whether it's just a misruck or, you know, a little turnover, and the next thing, you know, they've gone and scored down the other end. You know, there's been a lot of frustration there, but, you know, in terms of the character that we've had to get out of those groups and then perform well in day two, has been good, and we are beating the teams that we should be beating. But as I say, like, I mean, this year, I was kind of shocked at how competitive the entire circuit is. You know, you've got teams like Spain and Kenya and, you know, Ireland have just come up. They've just been promoted this year. They're sitting 10th place and, you know, they're competing against the top teams. You know, Argentina, like Wales even, like, they're tough, they're niggly teams to play and to beat. And so, you know, we're growing and we're improving, but I think we were so looking forward to London because it was the first time we really scrapped our way into a good pool. So we had New Zealand, Spain, ourselves, and Japan. So that was going to be our next tournament. So we were really looking forward to that. But unfortunately, that's kind of been postponed now. But going into the next, you know, London's been postponed until September. But going into that tournament, we're going in with a lot of confidence based off what we did in the last few tournaments.
That's really good. I mean, it'd be interesting to find out, like, within the squad and your perspective, whether people still see the sevens as like a stepping stone to 15s. Is that always like in the back of people's minds, or is it more about, right, I'm a sevens player now, that's the path I'm going down?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one, because I think we've got so much talent within the squad now. And guys who have been on the circuit for years, you know, Gav Lowe, Mentioned Max, Robbie Ferguson, you know, we've got some Harvey Elms, we've got some really, really talented boys coming up through the system as well. Like Kyle Rowe has been class this year, and Femi, you know, we've just got such a strong squad. Throughout. And I think, you know, personally, I want to see that squad develop as a core group. But obviously, you know, the Sevens has to be a stepping stone for young players that have aspirations to play for Scotland and play for the pro teams. And, you know, it's a great stepping stone, because the exposure you get, you know, in the circuit is, as I've mentioned before, pretty immense. It's you know, you really are put to the test in terms of your skills, and, you know, just how competitive it is. I mean, going forward, that, you know, that's something that I'd love to see this group of guys, you know, perform and, you know, start winning medals. And it's just kind of one thing I would kind of say with being part of the Sevens is how hard, you know, these guys work, how hard we all work. And it is slightly unseen work, because and that's just the nature of the circuit, because, you know, you go away, you perform for 2 weeks, you come back, and you know, you're kind of, then you're over at Ravenscraig, you know, training for the next tournament, but, you know, the exposure isn't really there during that time. And, you know, I think, you know, for myself, like, I've just kind of grown to love sevens, like, and whether it's because I've played kind of 15s for so long, but just the game itself, it's so exciting. It's like, you know, it's completely different. And you kind of take away the fatties of the game. But then, but then you're left with, like, you know, it's basically seven backs most of the time. But, you know, it is so fast, and it's so competitive, and it's so exciting. And, you know, I hope that people can get on board with the sevens circuit, you know, especially here in Scotland. I know it's difficult because we don't have that home tournament anymore, but, you know, it is such a great game to watch. Mm. And, you know, some of the places that we've toured, you know, coming to mind, Cape Town and Vancouver, like, what's so great about those tournaments is how much the kind of people love it. And the whole week on the run-up, like, you kind of walk down the street and you're kind of wearing your thistles and people are stopping you and asking for photos. And, you know, the whole city is kind of buzzing all the way up. And then the tournaments are just unbelievable. And I just kind of hope that we can kind of bring that fun and that kind of energy to kind of Scottish rugby, and like, and just to get that backing, because I think you can even see, like, in social media, like, during this time, like, we are, like, we're keeping really positive, we're trying to do little things, we're trying to, you know, challenge each other and, you know, have little competitions. Mm. But it's just a great energy around the whole circuit, and I'm absolutely loving it right now.
That's brilliant. Have you got one eye on the Olympics? Is that a goal for you?
Yeah, I mean, in the sevens, as I said, was, you know, it's very kind of new to me. I hadn't played in basically a tournament for kind of 9 years. It was the first time I played, and, you know, sevens has completely evolved from, you know, even the first time I've played sevens. You know, I went into this year just kind of fully focused on Scotland and wanting to do well for Scotland. And, you know, as the years kind of gone on, or the season's gone on, like, obviously there's talk about it. It's, you know, it's massive within the circuit, within, you know, all the teams, because all the teams are competing to, you know, all the players are competing to get a, you know, spot in their squads. But, you know, it would be awesome. But I think first and foremost for me was kind of performing and playing well for Scotland, and, you know, having that excitement of pulling on a, you know, a Scotland jersey again, which was, you know, has been pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, taking it back to that sort of, you know, earliest memories of the sport, that sort of joy you talk about, where did you first get into rugby? How did that come about?
Whatever.
Yeah. Just, you know, first memories of picking up a rugby ball, just going right the way back.
I mean, the first time, my first club was North Berwick Minis. And I was always, like, a real sporty kid, like, you know, loved, you know, all sorts of sport, kind of swimming, athletics, football. But rugby was kind of one sport that I suppose I picked up, you know, better than the rest. And I always loved it and kind of, you know, I suppose excelled in that sport. And so, yeah, Minis was my kind of my first memories, like, fond memories of rugby. We had a really good little team, and I was actually just talking to a few guys from Aki's yesterday, and they put up a photo of, like, they had a really strong Minis team.
Yeah,
I think it was the Bats Aki's. And they were all really strong, and they put up a photo of you know, their P6 team, and, you know, they've had a couple of cuts, and they were all saying, like, you know, what a season that was, until, you know, Tom and his North Berwick Thugs, like, came up and, you know, beat them in, you know, a couple of finals. But we were, yeah, I mean, that was great. Like, I love playing for North Berwick, and I've got fond memories there. And then moved into Edinburgh and went to Edinburgh Academy, and kind of played for the, obviously, the school team there. Mm. I had really good memories playing there, and that's kind of when I got, you know, into the kind of pathway and started playing for Edinburgh, 16s, 17s, 18s, and also kind of the international age grades. So,
when did you start to think, like, you know, I'm not too bad at this, like, rugby could be a career for me? Or did someone tell you that was maybe the case?
Yeah, I think kind of you start getting picked up in, you know, the academies and the institutes. You start getting picked up kind of around kind of 15, 16, from what I remember. So I was put in the kind of the institute, and, you know, with you know, I've kind of followed the same path as Ramble has. So we've done like kind of everything together. We got kind of signed the same year. We did the institute. We got, you know, went to the academy. But I suppose you start doing the age grade stuff, and that's when you kind of think, you know, this is something that, you know, you want to go for and you want to do well and you want to compete. And that's your first, you know, real taste of, you know, a really competitive environment where, you know, you're kind of put to the test and you're under a bit of pressure. And then I suppose for me, it was probably coming into my last years of school where, certainly my last year of school when, you know, I started playing for the under-20s and going on the Junior World Cup tours. And you know, I was kind of lucky enough to get a National Academy contract. So it was National Academy at the time, kind of straight from school. So that was kind of a full-time, you know, now they've got the four regions. But it was that kind of concept. But it was obviously a National Academy there. So it was kind of everyone throughout Scotland. So it was kind of a quite a small group back then. But that was a full-time kind of contract. So that's been from kind of 2008 when I left school. So that's when you kind of know that this is it's getting a bit serious. And I did the academy for a couple of years and then, you know, was lucky enough to get signed by Edinburgh off the back of that.
And then made your Edinburgh debut in 2010 versus Leinster, I think. Is that right?
Yep. Maybe.
I'm doing my research. What do you remember from that day? I mean, I looked at the lineups, and there's some like proper rugby legends on that pitch, and both Edinburgh like Chris Patterson, Mike Blair, Chunk, and Leinster's like Brian O'Driscoll, Darcy, Shane Horgan. I mean, that must have just been like crazy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously these are guys that I kind of grew up watching. My dad's he's actually an Ulster man. But he, you know, he's kind of been mad on rugby as well. So, you know, certainly the Irish provinces were something, you know, and at the time, you know, Brian O'Driscoll was playing out of skin and, you know, you've got guys like Paul O'Connell, you know, from Munster at the time, but, you know, to kind of take the pitch for these guys was almost surreal.
Yeah.
I suppose my only memory of that game, I think we actually beat Leinster in that game, which was pretty cool, but I remember, Rob Carney going over for a try in the corner at Murrayfield, and I kind of late hit him and gave him a dead leg. I just remember him like...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Basically, calling me an arsehole.
Yeah.
And like walking away. And obviously, like, you're someone that has, you know, been watching play for the Lions in Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty shit hot, you know. That's kind of my only memory of that game, I suppose. And just kind of being on that bench and kind of almost not wanting to go on because it was, you know, I was so nervous. But then, you know, once you kind of got on that pitch, it was just business as usual, really. And just kind of loved it. I just remember getting off that pitch and, as I say, I think we got a victory. And, it was pretty cool. So,
I mean, that must have been amazing. And I mean, When was it that you sort of felt like you were like sort of an established Edinburgh player? What sort of season was the sort of the breakthrough for you, do you think?
I think it's a tough one to like put like a point in that because I think my career went, you know, up and down and up and down at Edinburgh, you know, and that was for a number of reasons, you know, injury kind of really kind of hindered my career a bit, and you know, that real kind of consistency and progression, and I would never like look back at my career and feel that, you know, I missed out on any, you know, opportunities. You know, I've got no regrets, you know, being at Edinburgh and you know, the career that I had there. I remember fondly my first year kind of contracted, which was the was when my second year contracted, but would have been the Heineken Cup run.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, you know, beating Toulouse and playing Ulster in the Aviva was just like, you know, a memory that I'll hold forever. But that was like a real, you know, obviously a big moment for me. But, you know, off the back of that, I kind of had my second season syndrome, and you know, I didn't have a good season off the back of that. I picked up an injury and I found it hard to get back into a bit of form. And then I just remember kind of it was during the Solly year, but I remember having a season where I kind of got back into form and you know, started being on that team sheet pretty consistently. And you know, again, we had some good runs, and we were reaching quarterfinals and finals, and we had a strong team. And I think that was about kind of 2014-15, I think that was. Part of me wanted to grow into that kind of senior, one of those senior players at Edinburgh. You know, it was a real goal of mine to, you know, in my later years to be in that kind of leadership group, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously, you know, Edinburgh went through big highs and big lows. And I think, you know, one of those times, the start of, you know, Caucus's kind of era, you know, everything started off really well. And then I had probably the biggest injury of my career with my hammy, really found it hard to kind of get back from that. But look, as I say, like, I don't look back at that with any regrets. I think my Edinburgh career, you know, I loved it. I think, you know, what the opportunity has given me with the Sevens, you know, I wouldn't change that for anything right now. I'm so lucky to have played for Edinburgh and absolutely loved it. But I think, you know, it was time for a bit of a change there as well. It's, you know, the way that things have worked out has been, wouldn't have changed it.
Yeah. You've obviously sort of played under quite a few coaches then and sort of gone through, like, it seems like quite a big evolution of the Edinburgh team. Who were the coaches that you sort of really liked working with?
A guy I got like gone really well with, and whenever I, you know, get a chance to see him, and I'll start the season this year, you know, kind of back in with Edinburgh during the World Cup time, and you know, I was kind of 24th man for the Zebra game, but Michael Bradley,
right.
He was kind of one of my first coaches. He was coached during a kind of Heineken Cup run.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's just a great guy. Whenever I get a chance to kind of go up to him and see how he's doing, like, you know, he's a guy that I've got all the time in the world for.
Yeah.
He was great. Obviously, Rob Moffat, you know, very early days, was a great guy. And I suppose that's the thing, like, throughout that your career, you kind of just remember, you meet some like really awesome people, players and coaches. But yeah, definitely those two guys. And obviously, Hodgie's, you know, had his time as head coach, but it's been around for a while.
Like, yes.
I've worked with him for years and years now. So, and he's been part of my kind of career when I was coming up through age grade as well. So, you know, he's been around a lot. So, yeah.
Nice one. Favorite Edinburgh try? And don't pretend you haven't thought about it before.
There wasn't very many. I probably would say, I think this is probably coming off the back of, I think there was a replay of the Metro game.
Yeah.
But I think just in the like enormity of that game and like how much of a kind of spectacle it was.
Yeah.
You know, I remember scoring that try and kind of we were still, 20 points behind? I think it was 27-47 or something. But, you know, it was kind of the start of our comeback. And I just remember that game with, like, you know, it was all pretty, you know, all happened quite quickly. I came off the bench with about half an hour to go. I think we were 24 points behind or something at the time. But and just being part of that comeback was pretty awesome.
But, I mean, I rewatched that game as well, and it was absolutely wild. Like, just complete, like, the most mad game ever.
It's one game that is funny because it was. You know, it was my kind of probably my first or second year pro, but it's just a game that always, no matter who you speak to, it always kind of crops up again. And the kind of people, the few people who actually managed to kind of watch it live, because it wasn't televised, it wasn't, you know, it was none of that at the time. So I think quite quickly kind of word spread how much of a, like, an awesome game it was, and I think it ended up 48-47, it was pretty cool. It was a good game to be involved in.
Do you know, this comes from Alan, who's watching the game, do you know who it was that was trying to tackle you in the corner when you scored?
No.
It was a 20-year-old Vakatawa. Before he'd sort of gone through the French 7th team and then gone back into 15s.
Jeez. Wow. So that's, I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, that's Alan's kind of nerdy question. So then you got called into the Scotland squad in 2012. What was sort of the were there conversations had? Was that, like, on the cards, or was it sort of like a welcome surprise?
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise. I'd say I was really young at the time. It was, you know, very early in my career, and it was that Andy Robinson was coach at the time, and. It was off the back, but, you know, it was a bit of a kind of whirlwind season because it was the same season as the Heineken Cup run. You know, I just kind of got broken into the Edinburgh squad, played a lot of games. I think I played almost 30 games that season. So it was a big, big season. And then to go off and to play for Scotland was, you know, kind of a bit cheesy, but like a dream come true. We were out there, and I remember we went out, and back three we had Joe Ansbrough, we had Sean Lamont, Hoggy was there, myself, Visser, and Max Evans. But I remember Max Evans got pulled back because he was playing in the top 14 final, and Viss wasn't qualified as Scottish until the second game.
Right, okay.
So we played Australia, and, you know, it was awesome. You know, I managed, and Max wasn't able to come out until after the final, and Viss wasn't qualified. And, you know, so I got my chance, and I remember, you know, it was awesome. And I remember the build up and going up to Newcastle. You know, I remember being on the bench and kind of 30, half hour into the game. Like, the game hadn't really even settled. It was just kind of, because it was a horrible night. And I just remember being up there, and I just remember, it must have been about 25 minutes into the game. And, you know, a message came onto the bench, and we were just kind of, you know, behind the post, kind of warming up. And, you know, kind of, Sean's done his rims. Sean was playing on the wing. Sean's done his rims. You know, Tom, get ready to go. And I was like, oh, fuck. And then, about half an hour into the game, they were like, again, we were kind of behind the post, and they were like, you know, get your coat off, like, you're on. I remember walking, like, kind of half jogging up that touchline, like, kind of trying to slow down and, you know, kind of thinking, oh, God. But I remember walking up there, and then again, like, I remember kind of, you know, getting on the pitch, and it was just like, it went so quickly, but it was just such an awesome experience. It was like just class. Like, you know, I just remember being on that pitch. So, as I say, like, horrific night. I remember there was a scrum going in, and I was on the kind of blindside wing. And I just remember, like, watching Genya, like, put the ball in, and I could see him. He must have been like 15 meters away from me. But, like, I could see him, like, physically shaking. And that's, like, it was probably the first moment. It was, like, halfway during the, you know, we were really in the game, halfway through the second half, and I was, like, and I just looked at Genya, and I was, like, we're going to win this. Like, you know, how good. And then, obviously, like, it ended up being, like, one of those, you know, classic games, and, you know, kind of more more so remembered for the kind of famous Joe Ansbrough struck off, you know, his headbutt at the end of the celebrations. But yeah, you know, it was awesome. It was great. Like, you know, and it was kind of my one and only cap, but you know, I kind of feel like it was a good one to have. And, you know, again, memories that, you know, I'll have forever. But yeah, going into it, we then travelled off to Fiji. We had Fiji next and then Samoa, but Max flew out from the top 14 final. I think they'd won. But he came out, and then Vis came. He qualified as Scottish that week, so that was it. The international career finished. But yeah, no, it was class. And then, you know, I just remember the rest of that tour as well. And you know, I was out there with like Matty Scott, who I've played with for years and years through like age grade and kind of development, and you know, to have him out there as well was pretty cool. So yeah, good memories.
Any good stories from the night out after the win, was there? You weren't in like...
God, it was so long ago, but nah, I just remember we stayed in there. We went out, and I don't think this is like, from what I heard, it wasn't like most tourists, but I think, you know, at the time there was some like real kind of established, like kind of legends playing for Scotland. And, you know, I think a few of them were a bit older, and, you know, they went out, and I think a lot of them said like, this was a good tour. Cause I think, you know, I think it's still the only Southern Hemisphere tour where Scotland won every single one of their matches. So obviously it was a good environment to be around. But I think we went out about 10 days before the match, and we stayed in Manly, right on Manly Beach at the beginning. And obviously, you know, we had our kind of protocols of, you know, getting through jet lag and everything, but it's just trying to keep the boys awake. But, you know, I remember going out for a few beers, you know, during that week, or like, you know, when we arrived, and nothing too mad. And then we went up to the game in Newcastle, you know, got the result up there. And I remember coming back, and we had another three days in Manly. We had like another 10 days before the next game. So we had 3 days in Manly, but it ended up being like a kind of two to three day bender. So it was pretty good. I remember, it wasn't too bad. So I remember some of the older boys kind of turning around and being like, it's not usually like this. Like, it's classic. But obviously that was kind of 10 years ago. It's all changed now. We had a good time. And then we obviously flew out to Fiji and Samoa, and got a few good results out there. And, you know, just an incredible experience. Like, even just going out to these countries and experiencing like the culture and, you know, seeing how mad they are about rugby as well was really, really cool.
Do you still get on the seven circuit? Because obviously it's obviously like so brutal, but do you still get the chance to like go out and maybe have a beer, like have a bit of downtime, like get to know the other players, or is it just sort of like kind of business?
I mean usually we as I say, the tournament is so tough, like, you know, during that first week is a bit of a shock to the system. You know, you're obviously out there to like do a job, and you're basically, I mean, we flew out to LA pretty late this year, so we flew out on the Tuesday. We then had a hit out against Spain on the Wednesday, kind of a half down day on Thursday, captain's run, and then we were straight into the tournament. So it comes up pretty quick, and then obviously you play that tournament, and then you've just got, you know, you've kind of 2 days of kind of battle, and you're pretty broken by you know, the end of week one, and then you just got to do it again. And honestly, your mindset at that point is like, you're like, I want to go to bed, I want to sleep, I want to recover, I'm so sore, I'm so tired. You know, you're on a flight, you're leaving the hotel at, you know, 7 a.m. on the Monday morning, and you're flying up to Vancouver, or, you know, over to Cape Town from Dubai, and, you know, the last thing you're thinking about is probably a night out. But usually on that, you know, that second week, you get a chance to have a couple of beers. You know, you go through the kind of grind again. And I think it just gets towards the end of that second week. And honestly, like week two, day two, your body's just kind of numb. to like, you know, there's all these niggles that you pick up from, you know, week one, and you're nursing them, and you strap them up for, you know, week two, and you kind of go into it and you're a bit sore, but by the end of day two, like, your body's just like, you know, me personally, I've kind of taken so many painkillers, I'm, you know, pretty numb to anything. But yeah, obviously it comes off the back of, like, I think the thing about the Sevens is that there's so much work that goes on. Sort of, you know, as a spectator, you kind of watch the games and teams come on, and, you know, it's a 14-minute game and it's over before you know it. But the days and the weekends are like so intense, because you're up at kind of 6 o'clock in the morning, you're then getting your breakfast, you've got the nerves, and you're pretty anxious. You've got to travel to the stadium. Usually do like first, before your first game, you usually do like a bit of a primer. So you go out and you warm up, you're back in the change room, you get a bit of downtime, you know, a bit of analysis. And then, you know, you're back out again and you're doing your warm up, and your first game might be kind of 9 o'clock in the morning, but you've been up since kind of 5:30, 6 o'clock. Yeah. And then you might have 3 hours between, you know, ties, but, you know, those 3 hours, you've got to get in, you've got to get your recovery done, you've got to shower, you've got to, you know, go up, get a bite to eat, but then you're back down and you're kind of nursing any kind of niggles you've picked up, and you're doing a bit of analysis, you're getting restrapped again, and then you're out, you're warming up, and then you're just straight into the next tie. So, like, in the background, you know, we don't have time to like sit and watch the other games. Like,
really?
Quite often you find out results just by, you know, checking online, or you know, we don't have time to go up in the stands and enjoy a few games. Like, it's, you know, the days go on. You're kind of 6 a.m. to, you know, 10 at night. You know, it's a long, long day. So yeah, I mean, kind of going back, I've kind of long winded this question, but I think by the end of week two, you kind of feel like you deserve a beer. So yeah, you get a chance to go out, and it's usually like a, you know, an after party, you know, at some venue, but, you know, most of the teams go there and you get a chance to kind of catch up with a few of the players there. So, but it's good fun. Yeah, nice, really good fun.
Just a few sort of quick fire ones to finish off. Best player you've played with in your career?
With?
Yeah.
Best player I've played with? There's been a few good players. I'd actually say I only got a small amount of time to play with him, but Ross Rennie was class. I mean, one of the best kind of players that I ever played against, played with. You know, just the way he like presented himself and went about his business, like, you know, he was like an ultimate pro. You know, I loved his kind of attitude about rugby. He wasn't, you know, he could switch on and switch off, but he was just, you know, his class on the pitch. And, you know, I probably more, you know, I watched him throughout his career rather than playing with him, but, you know, I did get a few seasons with him, which was pretty cool. You know, kind of going back to my early years, like obviously playing with guys like Greig, you know, and everything he's done for, you know, Scotland. And, you know, I just remember at the time, I remember playing with this and, you know, some of the you know, tries and things that he could do was, you know, no one else could really do at the time. He was pretty awesome. But then kind of going into like, you know, later years, you know, looking at guys like Duan at the moment, like he's just, like, he's on absolute fire. Like, this, he's an absolute machine. Like, I don't think there's anyone in playing kind of Northern Hemisphere rugby that kind of compare to him. Like, I think he's, you know, to have him on your team and to have to train, you know, in my, you know, last couple of years, I'm more trained against him than with him. And he was a big boy, and he's, you know, some athlete. But yeah, you know, there's some class players, you know, I've played with throughout my the years I've played. But, you know, kind of even looking at the Sevens program now, like, you know, some of these guys are like absolutely, you know, I cannot kind of just, you know, emphasize how good some of these guys are. Like some of the things that Max McFarland does on a rugby pitch, on a sevens pitch, is just like mind boggling. Yeah. You know, and to kind of share a pitch with him is pretty awesome. And you know, Robbie Ferguson as well. Like, you know, these are guys that I'm sure will get, you know, an opportunity in 15s, wherever that might be in the future. But you know, there's some great players in the sevens program as well.
And what about the best player you played against?
I mean, obviously, like we've spoken about, like in terms of like legends of the game, like, you know, playing against like Brian O'Driscoll. I know my dad's got a photo of me and Bod from back in the day.
Oh, really?
You know, that's in his living room.
That's fast.
You know, framed up. But I remember one game. I remember playing. It was a Heineken Cup game. And I remember playing against Dougie Howlett, and right. He was just, yeah, I remember, like, he's just a guy that kind of sticks out in my mind as, like, everything he did, whether he tackled you or whether you were tackling him or, you know, was just done at 100 miles an hour. And, you know, I think one thing that I've kind of been kind of known for, you know, myself in my career is that I kind of go 100 miles per hour into everything as well. So
yeah.
I just remember being pretty battered and bruised. after that game, but he was just awesome. He had skills and, you know, obviously one of the best players kind of in the world, you know, ever to have played, but it was pretty cool playing against him.
And then the one we always ask people who come on is who's been your worst roommate in all your years involved in Scottish rugby?
Roommate?
Yeah.
Quite recently, the most recent one was Gav Lowe.
Right.
And he was just a terrible roommate. He's absolutely obsessed with this like soccer manager.
Yeah.
And you just don't get a peep out of him. He just sits there on his iPad. But he's got this like, I don't know whether it's like a, I don't know whether he's like watched the film recently or what it is, but he listens on repeat the Titanic theme tune just over and over and over again. And really? It is so strange. And he plays Football Manager and he's got the Titanic theme tune in the background. I don't know if it makes like Soccer Manager like more, I don't know, more dramatic or I don't know what it is, but he was someone to room with, but again, kind of looking back, and a couple other guys that spring to mind was John Andres.
The prop.
He was some character. But I remember sharing a room with him. I think it was a quarter final. We had a quarter final. I think it was against London Irish down there. We're playing at the Modeski down there. Down in Reading anyway, and I remember it was like, you know, you get to this point where it kind of gets to like 10:30, like, and you got a game the next day, and there's just this kind of mutual agreement between players of like, you know, like lights are going down and, you know, volume's going down a little bit on the TV, and you just kind of know, it's just like you just feel it, it's like this vibe in the room, it's like, you know, it's kind of time for bed now. And I remember I was like getting to this point, I was thinking, I was still quite young at the time and John was a bit older than me, but
yeah.
I remember thinking like, you know, shit, like I need to like probably just go to sleep soon. It's like, you know, nearly 11 o'clock. You had an early start, whatever. And I just remember John at 11 o'clock, 11:30, picking up the phone to room service and ordering a carbonara. nearly midnight, and you know, I'm sitting there and he's like sitting like up, he's got a TV blaring and he's munching on his carbonara. He's like, he was a stung boy.
But
apart from that, Vist was like always a nightmare to room with. He just, you know, big weird Dutch man who walks around naked and lay in his bed naked, like just zero kind of social boundaries. But yeah,
there's
just a few off the top of my head.
Nice one. Mate, that's been absolutely amazing. Thanks so much. I'm sure people are going to love listening to that.
Nice.
So best of luck with all the self-isolation. Hopefully we can get the seven season back on track. sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Good man. Thank you very much.
Thanks, mate.
Enjoyed it. Cheers, pal.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.